Those.
I don't know.
Those four.
I don't know anybody's name anymore. If I do, I don't remember it. If they knew, I don't remember them.
Gladys, that's not true. None of that is true. At all.
Don't pay attention anymore.
What do you mean anymore? But you keep busy during the days.
Oh yes. There was a book review in the Wall Street Journal 2 weeks ago in the weekend edition about. It was a very interesting book, but it sounded like an interesting book. I didn't read the whole review. I tear these things out and I say I'll get to it later, and I don't.
I know that feeling.
But the premise was that if God is eternal, he's outside the universe, like
right.
Looking in. And I was just wondering if that was a Jewish concept or not.
God
or
is eternal.
Eternal, without end. And while the universe is finite.
Right. That's very much a Jewish concept.
How God is outside looking in.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be true. That God, like we say in Adon Olam, that Hu Rishon Hu Acharon, he's the beginning and the end, right?
Yeah.
So that means that he transcends the world.
Is it really the beginning, the end, or there's no beginning and there's no end?
I like that formula.
I feel that that's rude because there's no end. He's eternal. But there's really no beginning to an eternity.
It's hard for, I guess, okay, as humans we can't comprehend exactly what that is.
He talked about how it progressed from a concept into the whole idea of saints being holy in certain places, being holy.
Who was it? So he's talking about this idea in other religions.
Yes, basically. But and then he said Luther came around along and leveled the playing field.
Right. So, very interesting.
We should be very happy for Luther. Because Luther ended the Crusades.
But he was also the biggest anti-Semite.
I understand.
He was.
But people were being killed and were being massacred by the Crusades.
Okay. So we still don't know. Hey, Simone. We still don't know who this belongs to. Okay, I guess we'll.
Hello, wherever you
She'll
are.
Be back.
Marilyn, did you see who? Is this Pauline's? It was Pauline's. Okay, and she said She said she's going to be back.
She is.
Okay.
We were talking to you.
Okay, good. We just didn't want to start without you. Okay, no. Okay, of course. Of course. You know, we were operating on the principle that not all bags, but most bags don't just, you know, appear by themselves.
Well, you're supposed to be suspicious about a tennis player.
Right. I myself wasn't suspicious. You know, I saw a New York Post. I saw this is a New Yorker, you know.
That's a camouflage. Don't be
sorry. Maybe you're right. So before we distribute the sheets, I wanted to discuss. So this week we're going to have something very controversial because we're going to talk about Yitzchak. Before we distribute any of the sheets, I just wanted to have a few minute discussion on Yitzchak as a very, very, very misunderstood character. Okay, so let's just begin by laying out the facts. There's no denying that in terms of the patriarchs, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, right, the most real estate, just in terms of how much we have in the Torah, you know, Abraham gets a lot of real estate, Yaakov, Jacob gets a whole lot of territory, Yosef gets a lot of territory, Yitzchak gets almost nothing. Okay, that's the first thing. Okay, and then, in terms of what we have in the Torah, like just what we have black on white, I mean, what are the major accomplishments that Yitzchak has in his life? So it sounds like zero. And if anything, was that? He marries well. That Rivka is a good fit character.
He was a bridge. It's really a bridge between Abraham and Yaakov.
Okay, so that's a view that's, I think, become, I think that's a very good view of Yitzchak in a lot of ways, that he's become a bridge, or that he is a bridge. Though I think that there's a lot more to Yitzchak, which we have to learn about tonight. But, okay, so first of all, there's not a lot of territory. That's our first point. The second thing is that he doesn't seem to have any major accomplishments. Thirdly, right, what do we know about Yitzchak? And I think this is what Shira was alluding to. I mean, you know, the, let's say, major episode that we have while he's alive is What happened?
Wait, the Akedah.
Okay, so we have to get to the Akedah, which is very important. Now, people sometimes maximize Avraham's role, but minimize Yitzchak's role. But we're going to talk about that. That's very important.
The distinction.
Okay, so what about that? And then we'll come to Gladys. So Marilyn, what's Yitzchak?
What was a major thing?
Right, and what was Yitzchak's role in that? Is it positive? Is it negative? Is it right? Traditionally, the way that we look at Yitzchak is as he was wrong. He was wrong about Yaakov versus Esav. Right? It says that he loves Esav. He thought that Esav was the one who should be the successor, and in fact, it's Rivka understands what the divine will is and understands that Yaakov is more fitting. And after all, Rivka is proven right. However we understand it. So Yitzchak is wrong. So we have very little material, number one, no clear major accomplishments, and this very ambiguous, at best, role in the Brachos. Okay, Gladys.
But also, Avraham also didn't really understand that it was not Yishmael, that it was Yitzchak.
Right, but as we discussed over the last few weeks, the last week and the week before that, I know, Gladys, you were only here for one of them, but what we showed is that according to many views, Avraham wasn't really wrong. It was sort of Sarah's attitude that Yishmael shouldn't be around, but Avraham never wanted to kick out Yishmael, and it's unclear whether or not it was a good thing to do, even in the end. So the fact that Yishmael had to be sent away is something that's going to be very relevant to our discussion of Yitzchak. I think that has a major impact on Yitzchak. Shira.
I think that now that you mentioned that, I think all three of the Avot show how important it is to love all your children, because they all have children with God. So, it's like they stand by them and they don't stop, especially Yitzhak doesn't stop the inevitable or a divine will or what has to happen for the Jewish people, but he also doesn't stop loving his children.
Right, and Yaakov's catastrophic mistake, which we'll, God willing, get to in a few weeks, is that he favors one child. That's his catastrophic error, right? And it's because of that, because of the favoritism that he showed to Yosef, clearly from the Psukim, that the brothers develop a hatred for Yosef, and what happens, and eventually we're all dragged down to Egypt because of that type of rivalry.
Partly it was Yosef's fault as
sure.
well.
Sure, Yosef didn't help.
After Yosef is gone, Binyamin becomes his favorite, and you don't get the same reaction from
right, because there was still some guilt there about what happened, as we see. So, here we have...
But in effect, you're talking really favor Esau, and that caused a lot of problems.
Can't hear you.
Yitzchak, favorite Esau. He was an extension of Esau. He was more like he was.
Okay, so we're gonna have to talk about the relationship between Yitzchak and Esau. So again, this is the traditional view that Yitzchak has all these strikes against him, not a lot of territory in the Chumash, there are no clear decisive actions. If anything, he's a very passive figure because of the Akedah. People like to portray him as very passive, very traumatized. At the time of the Akedah, if you do the math, like Chazal do, he was about 37. But even if you don't take that view, he was at least old enough to understand what was going on, and certainly old enough to run away or to resist. That becomes a very important point. Certainly, according to the view that he was 37, right? There's no question that he was willing. He was very much willing during the Akedah. That's going to become very important for us. It's an unsettling thought that he would be willing to really go along with that, but that seems to be the clear view within Chazal. Very good, Marilyn.
Yeah, so, when you talk about age, something that bothered me is when Avraham sends away... Ishmael. Ishmael's also older, and yet says his mother is carrying him.
Well, it's not clear that his mother is the one carrying her. As we saw last week, the pasuk says that Avram got up early in the morning, and he says, "Vayikach lechem v'chemat mayim." He took bread and water, right? And then he says, "V'et hayeled v'yishalcha." And then he gave her also the child. When he says to Hagar, "Sam al shechma," what you're referring to, not all of the commentaries agree that he said, "Put the child on your back." Rashi does say that because Ishmael was sick, he could no longer walk. But according to many views in the Rishonim, he was just saying, put the bread and water over your shoulder and the child will walk.
But then it says she casts him away.
Right. So it's once he's very sick, she sort of lays him down under. That might be, that doesn't prove that necessarily she was carrying him the whole time.
But what about with Mitchell? He said, except the fact that possibly he was passive, but it wasn't
right.
Just the Arcata.
Mm-hmm.
Look at the whole thing of picking a wife for him. Squall had to send someone mm-hmm. to bring back the wife. And then
right.
What he does, he goes back into his mother's tent.
Right.
That was the only way that he could, like...
Okay, so again, what Arthur is saying is all of these very, and it's very good that Arthur is mentioning these things, because these are all the, I think, the very accepted views, especially in today's day and age, that we have of Yitzchak. But what we're going to try to show is that there might be a whole nother dimension to the story. And specifically on that point, if people say, you know, Yitzchak and Rivka never really got along. After all, Rivka was brought to him. They don't communicate very well about their children. Rivka likes one, and Yitzchak likes the other, and Rivka has to deceive him, so there was no good relationship between them. What we're going to try to show is actually there was a very profound relationship between Yitzchak and Rivka, imperfect, like all human relationships, but nonetheless very loving and very profound, but very different than the relationship, let's say, between Yaakov and Rachel, or between Abraham and Sarah. As the Medrash says, that, you know, every relationship is different. I think this is something we appreciate in 2009, that every relationship is different. And the Torah says, look, you know, Yaakov went out and found a wife for himself, and Yitzhak had a wife brought to him, but, you know, different strokes for different folks, the Medrash basically says. You can't, everybody is different, every relationship is different. So the first thing that I want to, address is this concept of Yitzhak as a very passive, flawed, blind, not just literally, but figuratively, character. And I want to sort of start with a suggestion, a literary suggestion. I believe that the reason that the Torah spends so little time discussing Yitzchak is not because there's nothing to say, but this is what I would call intentional minimalism on the part of the Torah. The Torah doesn't say very much because that itself is the message, that Yitzchak, unlike Abraham and Yaakov, wasn't a great activist. He didn't run around interacting with people. He was a quiet, deep, private man. He didn't feel the need, as we're about to see, to be in the spotlight all the time. He didn't feel the need to be a revolutionary type figure. And yet, his worship of Hashem, as we're about to see, is very internal, private, and profound. That's why the Midah that the that Chazal associate with Yitzchak is one of Gevura, of internal, what do we say about Gevura in Pirkei Avot? Ezehu Gibor HaKovesh Es Yitzro. Who is the brave person, who is the warrior, he who is able to conquer his will, his desire, who is able to accomplish things internally. Yitzchak has internal greatness and strength. And the reason that the Torah doesn't spend so much time describing Yitzchak is because in a way that would be besides the point. It wasn't just about everybody that he met and all the things that he ran around doing, but what made Yitzchak great was the non-spectacular, the non-extraordinary, the daily, day-in, day-out service. Yeah, Shira.
Doesn't he also get credited with guarding prayer?
Okay, beautiful. And prayer, this is exactly what we're going to talk about. What is prayer? We're going to talk a lot about prayer.
Abraham is Shacharit.
Excellent. So we're going to talk about Abraham is Shacharit, Yitzchak is Mincha, Yaakov is Arvit. But the fact that prayer with Yitzchak is more, Yitzchak, I would say proportionally, percentage-wise, prayer takes up more of what we know from Yitzchak than it does with any other Avos, because prayer is the perfect action for Yitzchak. It's not running around, impressing himself upon people, interacting with world and society at large. It's Bein Adam L'Makom. Yitzchak stands in the presence of God. That is the forum in which he can best express himself. That is what makes him unique. And that is what we really need to know about Yitzchak. It's not about his interactions with the world. It's about, we're going to see two major episodes in his life, when he has tefillah, right? When he davens, and that is really, quote unquote, it's not really an action, because it's not active, it's not running around. It's what makes Yitzchak unique, though. That was his greatness, is that he really had a relationship with God, and he saw himself as standing in the presence of God. And I think this fits in very well with Pauline's point before about the Akedah, which is, just a second, Marilyn, and then we'll get to that. that Yitzchak, what makes Yitzchak so great, right, he doesn't accomplish any less than the other Avos. I mean, to be willing to allow yourself to be killed for God, okay, as difficult a concept as that is for us Westerners here in America in 2009, but to be willing to sacrifice everything for God, to give everything up, and to continually be defined from that point on. We know Yitzchak doesn't leave Israel because he was the Ola Tzmima, and we know that, according to some views in Chazal, the Akedah continued to affect him because later on he lost his eyesight because of the tears that went into his eyes. All these are different ways of expressing the idea within Chazal that Yitzchak is defined forever by the Akedah. And what was the Akedah? It was an act of self-sacrifice. Yitzchak's greatness is his ability to have a relationship with God, to sacrifice everything for God. Ultimately, God didn't ask him to make that ultimate sacrifice, but he was willing to do it, and to commune with God through prayer. What we don't understand about Yitzchak in 2009 is very much, it very much reflects things that are difficult for us, because it's so much easier for us to have dialogue, to talk about Bein Adam L'Chaver, to talk about the importance of kindness, because it is important, and Hachnasas Orachim, and to be a good and ethical person. To talk about having a relationship with God is so elusive, it's so difficult to speak about, and it's exactly what Yitzchak is about, and that makes Yitzchak a much less appealing character for us. It makes him much less accessible, much more difficult to relate to, but yet that really is his greatness. And that's why the Torah spends such small amount of time describing his other activities, because that's just not where that's not what made him compelling. That's what makes Avraham and Yaakov compelling. But what makes Yitzchak compelling is his quiet service of the Lord, his willingness to sacrifice everything, and his ability to pray with great intensity. And what is prayer, especially prayer with great intensity, if not the ability to really sense that one is in God's presence? To pray itself is to feel something which is almost impossible to articulate or to describe. It's to feel God's presence. And that's what makes Yitzchak unique. Yeah, Marilyn.
Well, I was just wondering if maybe the times didn't call for this very Avraham Berg kind of behavior. Maybe there was a more peaceful time, a calmer time.
Very good.
Much turmoil.
Okay, so that's exactly what we're going to talk about. That, and that's what I think Arthur said is very valuable. Yitzchak as a bridge. I would call Yitzchak a consolidating period. We're going to get to that when we get to Source 3. Okay, so now let's start to take a look at the Pesukim. Now that we've addressed the issue of why is there so little in the text, intentional minimalism, the lesson is that we don't need to focus on all of the daily actions, you know, the events that happened as we do with Avraham and Yaakov, because that's just not the emphasis. That would take away. Yitzchak's greatness is his ability to commune with God, to sacrifice for God, to interact with God. Okay, so this is the first source. Yeah, sure, of course.
If that's harder for us to relate to, then why wouldn't there be more written about it to kind of be more instructive?
I think that's a fair question, but I think that almost would defeat the purpose, in the sense that if it was given to us a little more, I don't know if we could accomplish the same goals if it was given to us explicitly. The whole point of to get Yitzchak, you have to really search with a fine-tooth comb. And I think that itself is a metaphor for searching out God. It's not possible to really have a relationship with God, as best as I can understand it, through reading about something. It has to be a deep search. And so in a way, our search for the meaning of Yitzchak is very much the search for a relationship with God itself. It's an internal process, it's a subtle process, it's a challenging process. It's not something that's going to come and hit you over the head. So, V'yitzchak b'amibo, the Pesukim say, V'yitzchak b'amibo be'er l'chai ro'i. This will become very crucial for us later on. Yitzchak is on his way back from be'er l'chai ro'i. By the way, what was be'er l'chai ro'i? Where do we first have that be'er? The be'er where Hashem appears earlier in Bereishit. We had it a few weeks ago. That's the hint. That's the well which the angel appears to Hagar at. Okay, so that well itself is associated with Hagar and Yishmael, Be'er L'chai Ro'i. Yitzchak ba mibo Be'er L'chai Ro'i, v'hu yoshev Be'eretz HaNegev. He was in the south. Vayetze Yitzchak lasuach basada lifnos Arev. Yitzchak went out to have a conversation. Lasuach is sicha. Sicha is a conversation. Lifnos Arev. Vayisai na vayar v'hine gemalim ba'im. And he saw that there were camels coming. And this is what Pauline was referring to. If you just take a look down at the Gemara, we'll return the Pesukim to the second. In a second, Yitzchak tikein tfilas mincha, shenemar, vayetze Yitzchak lasuach basada lifnos arev, Ein Sicha Ela Tfila. This means that Yitzchak founded Tfilas Mincha. But I want to go one step deeper into this pasuk. Because we know that there are many different languages that are used for tefillah in the Torah. There's amad, amida, shmona esrei, that's what we have from Abraham, to stand. And Yaakov, we have lashon pigi'ah, vayifga b'makom, that's mariv. But here we have the language of sicha, of conversation. And I think this fits in very well with our theory of Yitzchak. We're not going to see a lot of dialogue between Yitzchak and other people. Almost none. Yitzchak doesn't have great conversations. When does Yitzchak feel most at ease? When does he open up emotionally, conversation-wise? With God. Yitzchak is able to have sicha with God, very little dialogue with other people. But what's unique about this pasuk of Vayetze Yitzchak lasuach basada lifnos arev, Yitzchak's conversations, where he feels most comfortable having these conversations, is with God. He's not a great conversationalist in the human sense. But his greatness is his ability to feel comfortable in God's presence, talking with God, telling God how he feels. Okay? Vatisa Rivka, I say, Naha, Rivka who's coming now, Rivka is coming to meet Yitzchak, she's being brought by the Eved. Vatisa Rivka, I say, Naha, Vatera et Yitzchak, she sees Yitzchak, Vatipol me'al ha'gamal, she immediately falls off the camel. Okay? So however exactly we understand this, what's clear is that Yitzchak has tremendous presence. He doesn't convey his greatness through action or through dialogue so much. His greatness is simply in his presence. And I would say she sees him davening and she sees the intensity of that moment and she's overwhelmed because of his great intensity as a spiritual figure. Vatomer al ha'eved, and then her natural reaction is she says to the eved, Mi ha'ish halazeh ha'olech basadal dikratenu. Who is this giant of a man who walks in the field to greet us? Not just, right, Mi ha'ish halazeh, it's a very unusual language for Tanakh. Who is this great man? Mi ha'ish halazeh ha'olech basadal dikratenu vayoch. Halazeh, it's even more than hazeh. Hazeh means this. Halazeh means this remarkable man. It's an exclamatory, it's declarative. Mi ha'ish ha'lazeh, ha'olech basadeh likratenu, she is overwhelmed with him, she has fallen off the camel. Vayomer ha'eved hu adoni, the eved says, he is my master, batikach ha'tza'if batikach. She immediately covers herself with the veil, not out of shame or fear. Some authorities, some commentaries do say that it was that. I see it much more as respect. She senses the gravity, the dignity of the man, and she doesn't want to be underdressed. She doesn't want to be naked. She feels like she has to cover herself up. It's an instinctive reaction to Yitzchak's presence, to his overwhelming presence. Have you ever seen, there are certain people, there are very few by definition, but have you ever been in the presence of a great man? There's no way to articulate it, but you know what it is. It's a sort of sense that this person has something intangible and yet totally captivating. And Yitzchak has that sense about him. And Rivka, who hasn't seen him before, doesn't know anything about him, is just overwhelmed. Susan Deegan.
Okay, so Rivka was supposed to be Carol 3, 4, 7.
I think that the point of that measure, which says that she was 3, is much more the point that she was innocent. Okay, it's saying in contrast to Lavan, she was not a deceptive person at that time of her life. I don't think that Yitzchak really married a 3-year-old. That's always been
right.
My view.
Well, I can't believe that either.
Right, and it'd also be very unlike a 3-year-old to cover herself up with a veil, to have this conversation, Mihaish Hasadah. Nonetheless, you know, forget about that, but to let a 3-year-old ride on a camel by herself seems to be a very negligent thing to do. Yeah, Gladys and then Arthur.
In a way, covering herself seems to be a way of withdrawing, because she's overwhelmed.
Overwhelmed.
Because she wants to withdraw and leave Yitzchak to his own private.
Well, right. I think I agree that she's overwhelmed. I think that we're going to see that they have a very profound relationship, But there's something truly impressive about Yitzhak. Yeah, Arthur.
You know, when you say that she was innocent, she was not like her father. But the rest of the story...
Then she's going to need to...
The rest of the story bears out the fact that the apple didn't fall
far from the tree. Agreed, and we're going to see how she has to resort. She has to...
Was in horror.
Then that was not lost on Chazal. Chazal do say that when she does that later on, that she learned that...
Right, that deception can be...
She learned the arts of deception at home, let's say. Yeah. Sure.
I feel a little bit like with the power of the meeting, that the covering of herself or face or whatever feels to me more like when you say in the presence of a person with great presence or great power, I think you kind of feel like the person, and especially if they click together, like they will,
right.
I think maybe she felt like he could see right through her.
That's
how it spoke to me.
That's like a beautiful...
Like she feels... You know,
right.
Like he could see through her in that moment.
I love that formulation. That's great. I think that's a really good formulation. Then, okay, so just moving on with the. I think that works pretty especially because he's able to daven so well, and he's able to have such a deep interaction even with something that's not exactly there. But he's able to search and find that. That there's a certain very penetrating quality to the man that makes her feel exposed. Very well said. Vayisapera Eved li Yitzchak et kol advarim hasher asa. So the Eved tells Yitzchak everything that happens. Now again, Yitzchak doesn't have a long conversation with the Eved. He doesn't say anything back. Yitzchak, who's he most comfortable conversing with Hashem? That's where his sicha happens. Okay, so Yitzchak listens. He listens to what the Eved tells him, and then he moves. Vayibi'aha Yitzchak. Yitzchak takes her ha'ohel asara imo into the tent of Sarah. Arthur alluded to this correctly before. Into the tent of Sarah, his mother, vayikaches Rivka, and he takes Rivka, vatihilo leisha, right, and they have a relationship, they become man and wife, vayehaveha. He loves her. Okay, they had a loving relationship. Vayinachem Yitzchak acharei imo. And Yitzchak psychologically is assuaged after the loss of his mother. Now, here's my question. The Torah has never told us before that Yitzhak was struggling psychologically, emotionally, with his mother's death. Okay? We don't know anything about that until now. And outside of the tent, there doesn't seem to be any interaction between Yitzhak and Rivka. If anything, Rivka is very covered up. But I think this pasuk is the key to understanding everything we need to know about Yitzhak. This is a deep and private man. Outside of the Ohel, Yitzchak is not going to show too much emotion to other people. He's going to interact with the Kaddish Baruch Hu, with God. He's going to daven profoundly. And for him to be himself, to open up to other people, to his wife, let's say, he has to be in the Ohel. First, Vayivyeha Yitzchak HaOhela, he brings her into a private space where he doesn't have to be in the world. Out there. Avram's greatness is running outside the tent, bringing everybody into the tent. Yitzchak really becomes much more expressive inside of the tent. Yitzchak goes into the closed space, he goes into the tent, that's where he can really interact comfortably with Rivka. For him, he's a private man. He interacts with Rivka there, and he interacts with her deeply. They become man and wife. He loves her. And then we're told that, it's only after Yitzchak is in the Ohel that we start to find out things about his emotional life. Why did the Torah tell us before that he was struggling with his mother? It's almost like the Torah is only revealing that to us once we're in the tent with Yitzchak and Rivka, so to speak. You don't gain access to Yitzchak's emotional world until you're in the tent, because he's not going to let you in. The Torah doesn't tell us that he was struggling with his mother's death because he didn't tell us. He's not going to tell anybody. It's only once he's in the Ohel. He's in a private space where he feels comfortable.
It's a shelter also.
It's a shelter for him. This is a private man. There's nothing wrong with privacy. Right? But to understand Yitzchak, we have to understand that he opens up to God. That's who he has his sicha with. Or to select other people, right? His wife, in the privacy of a tent.
Does it say that she loves him?
That is an open question. That is a very important point. Other Mephoreshim pick up on that. I think based on the next source two, that we're going to see that they love each other very much. Vayetar Yitzchak Lashem. We just have to build up to that. But Marilyn, very good observation. Yeah, it is one directional, and that's something that does occupy that portion. Moving on in our analysis of Yitzchak as a private, quiet, but profound, overwhelming person. Vayetar Yitzchak Ladonai Lenochach Ishto Ki Akarahi Vayeater Lo Adonai Vatahar Rivka Ishto. Yitzchak davens to Hashem. Again, our second scene with Yitzchak, what's he doing? That which Yitzchak does. He's not running around, he's not meeting foreign dignitaries, he's not balancing the budget, he's not, you know, making it, you know, whatever it is, he's davening.
Can you
know so what is the language of atar? Right. So let's just assume for a second we didn't know what that word meant. It's something l'Hashem, right? It's something between Yitzchak and God. Lenochach ishto, opposite his wife, ki akarahi, because she is barren. Vayi'atir lo Hashem, again, there's that word. Let's assume you don't know what it means, but Hashem does it back to him. Vatahar Rivka ishto, and Rivka becomes pregnant. So almost by process of elimination, it has to be something akin to davening. But you're right to point out it is a very special language. Vayi'atar isn't just davening, it's davening with the most penetrating, intense energy. It's Yitzchak is beseeching, imploring the Lord, please, for my wife, I want children from her. We're going to focus on that a lot later. Lenochach ishto, this is what I was referring to a second ago when I was talking to Marilyn. Lenochach ishto means opposite his wife, because I'll understand that she was davening as well, that she should only have children from him. We're going to get to that medrash in just a second. Okay, so again, Yitzchak's greatness expressed through davening. And Hashem is moved by his tefillah. There's something not just overwhelming to Rivka about Yitzchak's davening. Remember when Rivka first saw Yitzchak davening, she literally falls off the camel and she covers herself because, like Shira says, it's like he can see right through her. It's not just Rivka, but it's also HaKadosh Baruch Hu kibayachal, that God himself is overwhelmed by Yitzchak's tefillah. Vayetar Yitzchak Adonai lenochach ishto, vayeater lo Adonai vatar Rivka ishto. It's almost like God says, okay. He puts his hands up and says, I'll do what you want. Okay? And the Gemara picked up on this. The Gemara read this pasuk and it was just so striking. Normally we don't see that you get answered so quickly and right away. Amar Rav Yitzchak, appropriately named, Rav Yitzchak, many generations later, Lama Nimshla Tfilashen Sol Tzadikim Ke'atar. Right, the word here is that's used is Vayetar. Why is the Tfilah of Tzadikim, and specifically Yitzchak, compared to an Atar? An Atar literally means a pitchfork. Penetrating tool. Ma'atar Zem Hapecha Tfua Mimakom Lamakom. Just like a pitchfork moves the hay, right, moves the wheat from place to place, right, if you take a pitchfork. Kach tfilatan shel tzadikim mehafechas midosav shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu mimidas ragzanas lemidas rachmanas. So too, just like a pitchfork turns things over, so too the tfilah of tzadikim, specifically here Yitzchak, was able to overturn not the hay or the straw, but God's will. From anger to compassion. So Yitzchak's tfilah is overwhelming, firstly for Rivka, and then for God, right? It engenders a dramatic response. Yitzchak causes Rivka to fall, causes God to respond in kind. Again, these aren't long stories. It's not like the stories we have with Avraham and Sodom, or with Avraham and Lot, or with Yaakov and Paro, or Yaakov and Esav. It's not these long, drawn-out stories. It's these little, short psukim, these little bursts between Yitzchak and God that tell us everything that we need to know about the man who expresses himself b'sicha, with conversation with Hashem, the man who expresses himself to his wife in the privacy of a tent, who's not going to go, this is the strong and silent type. That's to be simplistic about it, that's what's great about Yitzchak. And even when Yitzchak is involved in activity, it's a very specific kind of activity, and This is what I was alluding to before when we're going to say, when Arthur was saying the bridge and Marilyn was saying, you know, maybe this is quieter times and this is what the times required, and I think it's true. Okay, so if we go to source 3, yeah, we could read over it as a very mundane point, but when you understand Yitzchak's character, it becomes very profound. The Chol HaBe'eros, all of the wells Asher chafru avdei aviv bimei Abraham aviv, that Abraham's servants dug all of their sources of livelihood and sustenance, all of the wells, all of the things that Abraham achieved, metaphorically, in his day, with great effort, inevitably, sitimum plishtim v'yimalum afar. The plishtim, right, took dirt, and they blocked up the wells. Okay, so you can accomplish all that you want to accomplish in the world. And Abraham definitely accomplished a lot. And that's very prestigious. And you get your name on buildings, and you get a lot of right, accolades. It's, you know, the illustrious Abraham, and all the things that he was a pioneer and an innovator. And these things are all true. But you know what? If you don't have maintenance, if you don't go and make sure those things stay open and running, it's not worth a dime. Vayashov Yitzchak, and what's Yitzchak's accomplishment? Vayachporis Beiros Hamayim Asher Chafru Bimei Abraham Aviv. He reopens those wells. Vayisatmum Plishtim, the Plishtim had closed them up, and Yitzchak's not looking for grandeur. He's not looking for his own great accomplishment. Nobody's going to say, oh, you know, the vaccine was discovered, and then, you know, things didn't work out so well, and then a guy came and fixed things up. No, who invented the vaccine? Abraham, great. And Yitzchak, you know, made sure it was still working. But you know what? For the kids to get the vaccine, it needs to be working. So, you know, from a results perspective, it's equally crucial. It's just that from a prestige, pioneering, you know, perspective, it's not worth as much. And not only that, Vayisamun plishtim achorei mot Abraham, Vayikra lahen shemot, Yitzchak calls their names, kashemot asher kara lahen aviv. He doesn't even rename them. He doesn't want his own prestige. He doesn't want to point out to everybody, by the way, we're changing the names because I had to redig them. We're not calling the well Yitzchak land, or Yitzchak well, or Yitzchak water, right, or whatever it is, right. He just called them the same names. Nobody should know that he had a major role to play. In just a second. So this is, even when Yitzchak is active, he doesn't want to stand out. He doesn't want the limelight. He doesn't want the attention. He doesn't want prakim upon prakim of data about him. He wants to do his job. He wants to have an impact in a quiet but effective way. Yes, Shira.
And he's also the only one of the three who doesn't get his own name changed. So that's kind of a keeping him positive.
That's very good. In other words, he's consistent. He stays with this identity. Very well done. Very well done. Any other questions before we move on to?
But Shira, he didn't. The other ones didn't change their names.
But he had their names changed.
But it wasn't their action that caused the name to be changed. It was God's.
But it reflects a certain dynamism in character that the times demanded a certain growth, a certain transformation, and they were the people who were able to accomplish that transformation. Yitzchak is consolidating. Yitzchak is, as Marilyn was saying, Yitzchak is making his impact not through anything transformative, but simply through the day-to-day intensity that he brings to service of God. Again, it's hard to write newspaper headlines about this. You know, you can imagine, right? When Abraham wins the war against the four kings, you know, the back page, you know, since we have the Post here, I was going to say the Daily News, but in deference to the Post, we'll say the Post. Back page of the Daily News is, you know, Abe slaughters four kings, you know, receives hero's welcome, you know, or, you know, the next day, you know, they'll have a victory parade. No, New Yorkers welcome hero Abe. You know, you're not going to get too many headlines in the Post or the Daily News which say, you know, Isaac serves God again, just like yesterday. Isaac's prayer, you know, truly intense and penetrating. You know, these aren't the types of things, that, right? Isaac unclogs the wells. You know, is honored by the Plumbers Association. You're not gonna have a tremendous amount of attention that these things are gonna. But they're really just. It's all Yitzchak's character. This is a man who, at the very beginning, when his father, it became clear to him, his father hinted to him, and he knew, God is asking me to sacrifice everything, he didn't say, well, wait a minute, I have so much to accomplish, I have so much yet to do, you know, the last chapter can't be now. He says, well, if this is what's written, this is what's written. If this is what God wills, then that's what I'm going to do. His responsiveness to what God wants is just, you know, off the charts, and And I think that's what the Torah is trying to get across. He is always, he went through the Akedah once early in his life, but he's always with that attitude. He's always defined by that kind of service, self-sacrificing service. It's not about advancing himself or his own personality. It's about service of God. He is always the very much the ready servant, the willing servant to sacrifice. Okay. Now, we may have to continue with this next week, but now, with this background, I want to delve into the next point, which is Yitzchak is not, as he's often portrayed, just a confused elderly man who doesn't understand the true identity of his children, Yaakov and Esav, but Yitzchak is also a man who has a wish for his family. And that wish is that he never, ever, ever have to send any of his children away. And just I'll make the argument in its broad outline, and then we'll try to argue about this from the Pesukim, is that Yitzchak, just like his father Abraham, was very upset. Remember what we said, when Yishmael was going to be sent away, Abraham was broken. He was just broken up about it. And God said, you know, maybe you have to do this, and but you know what we don't know at the time is how Yitzchak felt about it. What I'm going to try to make the argument is that Yitzchak always, always stayed in touch with his brother Yishmael. He always wanted to have a relationship with him. He always made sure his children had a relationship with him. He always included Yishmael. Never said, okay, you were sent out, now I can take over Yippie. And also, he always wanted to make sure that each of his children would have a place, that he would never be asked to send away one of them. This is Yitzchak's great wish. Whether or not he gets it, that we can talk about. Okay, so now we go back to the Pesukim, and we're able to pick up on certain details that may have sort of, you know, escaped our attention before, because the Pesukim aren't going to announce things, you know, with the bullhorn. It's going to be settled. Remember the first pasuk we saw, just before Yitzchak is davening. V'Yitzchak ba mibo be'er l'chai ro'i. V'hu yoshev be'eret ha-negev. Yitzchak is coming from Be'er L'chai Ro'i. But what was he doing in Be'er L'chai Ro'i? What is Be'er L'chai Ro'i? As we said, Al-Kain Karola Be'er, Be'er L'chai Ro'i, Hinei Ben B'Kadeshu Ben Shur. That's all the way from back in Lech Lecha. Be'er L'chai Ro'i is Hagar and Yishmael's place. The Torah is hinting to us that Yitzchak has kept up a little bit with Hagar and Yishmael. He still goes back from time to time to Be'er L'chai Ro'i. Place that that's the last place you would expect Yitzchak. That's the place which promised that there would be a Yishmael. Aren't Yitzchak and Yishmael antagonists? Don't they have nothing to do with each other? Wasn't the whole reason Yishmael was sent away for Yitzchak? Or was it? Or did they have a relationship? And it's not just there. Vayivava yamur Abraham b'sevata tovaz akenu v'saveya. Abraham dies at a ripe old age. Vayase pelamav. Vayikru oto Yitzchak v'Yishmael banav. Isn't the long-lost brother who they have to track down a month after, you know, the parent dies and says, by the way, mom or dad died. On the spot, Yitzchak and Yishmael are there to bury their father. They're communicating. They make the funeral arrangements together. And not only that, but the Torah goes out of its way to say, Yitzchak v'Yishmael banav. They were both always banim to Abraham. And they looked at themselves that way. We're brothers. We're sons of the same father. My father is my father, my brother is my brother.
Do you think possibly mm-hmm. the relationship that Yitzchak had with Hagar mm-hmm. stems from the theory that Hagar was mm-hmm. the second wife of Abraham, was a stepmother, and therefore there was a relationship?
Yeah,
there was a good number of years between the death of Sarah and Abraham.
Yeah, and in fact, I'll go one step further.
From the issue from that relationship too.
I think what Arthur is saying is
siblings.
Is very true. And just to go one step further, remember last week we concluded with the point of, according to the view that Hagar and Yishmael are not evil characters, but for whatever reason they had to be sent away for a time, and that was Sarah's initiative, but Abraham always loved Hagar and Yishmael. We said, according to that view, anybody remember that the identity of the woman known as Keturah is actually, she's actually Hagar, that Abraham remarried. But I'll go one step further, and in fact, the Medrash says that who went on Abraham's behalf and brought Keturah to Abraham? Yitzchak. But Yitzchak went and said, He writes, he also felt close to Hagar, and he brought her back. He knew where to find them. He knew where to find Ishmael. He knew where to find Hagar. Yeah, Gladys.
But those children of Keturah, were, the minute they were growing, were sent away.
But with,
there was no relationship. Not even
as,
though,
but not in a rejecting way. Remember, Avram gives them grades.
Gives them gifts, so
right.
Sends them away.
Right. No, there is a special relationship between Yitzhak and Ishmael, for sure, because, you know, they grew up together a little bit more, at least for a time. Okay, so Yitzhak, the first hint we have is he's in Be'er Lachai Roi. He's in contact with Hagar and Ishmael. The second point that we have is that as soon as Avram dies, the brothers work together, they support each other, they bury their father together. As we mentioned, as Arthur pointed out, and the Medrash says that Yitzhak is the one, this is quoted by Rashi, Yitzhak is the one who goes and brings Hagar back. Now we have the next verse. Vayetar Yitzchak l'Adonai l'nochach ishto ki akara hi, a pasuk that we saw already. We'll just see it in a little bit of a different light. Vayi'ater lo Adonai v'tahar rivka ishto, the pasuk of great prayer. L'nochach ishto, says the Medrash, melamed shahaya Yitzchak shatuach kan v'hishtucha kan. Yitzchak was lying on one side of the floor and she was lying on the other side of the floor. They're both davening for each other. This is Marilyn's question, does she love him also? So this Midrash has the answer. V'omer ribono shel olam, Yitzchak said, kol banim sha'ata notinli, any child that you'll give me in the future, yi'ya min ha-tzadekes hazo, should be from this righteous woman. Af hi amra kein, kol banim sha'ata atid litainli, yi'yu min ha-tzadek hazeh. Any child that you give me, says Rivka, should be from this tzadek. There's this mutual respect, this profound respect. I do not want to take another wife, says Yitzchak, and Rivka is totally committed to her husband. To Yitzchak, there's this total commitment. Okay, now we appreciate both the love that they had for each other, but also one more point. If our theory is true, that Yitzchak never, ever wants to get into a situation where he'll have to send somebody away, like his brother Yishmael was sent away, what's one of the best ways to go about that? Don't have multiple families. He's nervous that what will happen to him is what happened to his father. I'll take another wife. There'll be this rivalry. Something is going to go wrong, and somebody's going to have to be sent away. But if I only have one wife, nobody's going to be sent away. We'll be one family together. That's what Yitzchak and Rivka are saying. We don't want to split up. We don't want to have to send anybody away. What's that?
Yes.
No, that's a Yaakov. Yeah, it's a problem. That's what we're going to talk about when we get to Yaakov. Okay.
Yes.
So now we just take a quick look at source 7 again. Now, this source is usually brought to be a criticism of Esav, but there's something, I think, much deeper here. If we appreciate that Yitzchak and Rivka never, ever wanted to have to choose between their children. Vayi Esav ben arba'im shana vayikach isha et Yehudit. He takes bat be'eri achiti, v'et basmat bat elon achiti. He takes two women who are from Benoth Kena'an, v'atiyena morad ruach li'Yitzchak u'l'Rivka. They don't have the same values as Yitzchak and Rivka. Okay, the Medrash says they were pagans, whatever it was. It bothered Yitzchak Rivka a lot, right, for value reasons. Now, right, if you were ready to reject one of your children, okay, it might upset you, but it wouldn't be so terrible because you just say, okay, so this is the one who we're going to leave behind. This is the one who isn't going to be our legacy. So he wants to, you know, marry these women who aren't, really value-centric people. Okay, whatever, it's not our first choice. But the fact that it was so bothersome to Yitzchak and Rivka, let's just keep this thought in the back of our mind. That makes sense. Second, that makes sense. If we appreciate that Yitzchak and Rivka are deeply invested in their children, both of them, and their triumphs are Yitzchak and Rivka's triumphs, and their failures and their struggles are Yitzchak and Rivka's struggles. They love their children. Okay, yeah, Simone.
I just read that as that Yehudi and Bosmat were Morat Ruach. That's the way they acted towards them.
Mm. Right, so but either way, if Yitzchak and Rivka were detached, if they were apathetic towards Esav by this point and said, look, he's 40, he's obviously not going to change, you know, you wouldn't be as annoyed by his wives. You just say, okay, this is their, you know, not every kid turns out. And know what's even better because we can only choose one anyway. So it doesn't become, even if it just means on the simple level they behave that way, it doesn't become a source of spiritual upheaval. It doesn't become so threatening. But we're gonna come back to this point, and we're gonna see how impactful this is. We're gonna see how impactful this is. This point is even later on. Yeah, sure.
That name is
interesting, right? Yeah, I always thought that was a little strange too. Yeah, and Gladys.
The fact that they were Canaanite is very bothersome because.
Correct. The question is why. We don't know what's so bad about the Canaanim.
Because of, well, they're descendants of Noah's son.
Right.
And they.
So does that mean that they're
like cursed to start with?
Okay, so it might be something that has to do with that.
Chiti
is one of the Chiti is one of the seven Canaanite tribes. Yeah, the Chiti are one of the seven nations of Canaan.
Well, Esav did it. This pasuk comes right after he's talking with God sent Yaakov away.
Oh no, so that's going to come later. Right now we're into our seven. That's before any of that.
Okay,
so but then we're gonna come back to it. That's what I meant. We're gonna come back to it. But the first source is before Yaakov is sent away at all. This is before the brachos are given, and Yitzchak and Rivka are having a hard time with the fact that Esav didn't marry girls that they approved of, meaning that they were invested in his spiritual development. The fact that it wasn't working out was a source of stress for them. Okay, so now let's take a look at the next source. Yeah, of course.
Maybe too big a question. No. One more, but why does everybody feel forced to pick one over another?
Abram didn't want to. Abram thought it was a terrible thing. Yitzchak doesn't want to. Yaakov, we have to talk about, because Yaakov really does seem to want to elevate one.
But even with this, like, the bracha of the before, why is the world set up that way, that you have to pick one? Why can't... There's obviously only going to be, like, one before. Like, why is... Why do you set up an equity for your children?
Right. So there shouldn't be. Well, I mean, we can talk about that, but I think that's a very important question. But I think a lot of what Tanakh tries to show is that the ideals always have a role for anybody. I'll just make a few quick examples. Our Menashe and Ephraim. We can talk. Hopefully, we'll get to them. That's the major point about Menashe and Ephraim, is that they get along, and that's what's so unique about them. Moshe and Aaron. Okay, that the two great leaders that we have for most of the Chumash are in fact brothers that you didn't have to choose. Okay, so because we're
Menashe and Ephraim. Mm-hmm. Remember the
civil war in Shochem.
The death scene, Yaakov's death scene, where Yosef.
So Yaakov might never get it, but Yosef says, "Dad."
Yeah, but Yosef tried to reverse them and take advantage of his father's blindness.
Well, not. I wouldn't say take advantage. He would say, "Dad, don't start making this trouble. This is how we got into this situation to begin with. Remember how you favored me, even though." So that whole story. So just do what's natural. Just say, "Okay, older doesn't necessarily mean better, but there's a certain financial incentive that comes with it." So
that's the way the world at that time was. And for many, mm-hmm. many, many, many hundreds of years.
Well, I think the world felt, or the people felt, that someone had to be the leader.
Okay. Yeah.
And this was the most equitable way of choosing the leader.
David's kids, it's a problem. So you know what we're going to do, because I see we're running out of time. We'll pick up with this point. We're going to pick up with this point next week about how Yitzchak's plot to make sure that all of his children have a place. We're just building towards that. But so in the 2 minutes I have left, just to address Shira's question. So Shira's saying is that it's obviously a source of trouble when you have favoritism. But isn't that sort of written into the Torah? Because in Parashat Ki Tetzeh, we have the fact that the Bechor gets double the amount. So one way to look at that, and again, you know, this you don't have to look at it this way, but my preferred view is to say the Torah always wanted that everybody should have a role. Right? That's the greatness in the end, that there are 12 tribes and each of them has its own special place. That's the direction we want things to move in. But the concept of the Bechor was sort of a concept of natural responsibility. And this idea, we don't have time to substantiate it now, but that this idea comes up a lot in Halacha, a lot in the Gemara, that part of the reason for the double financial package is that the Bechor would sort of make sure, would take financial responsibility for the estate, and to make sure that things were taken care of. So it was a sort of, with privileges, with responsibility and accountability comes a certain privilege, but it's not a way of saying that somehow this is more important. The great stories, the great triumphs of Tanakh are when brothers really do love each other and really do get along. And remember, this is one of the greatnesses of Yitzchak, just to round it up. Yitzchak is a man whose greatness is in his is not in his running around and, you know, doing all kinds of noteworthy things. It's really in his service of God, his sacrifice for God. But it also happens to be that he's a great brother. And he never accepts the fact that Yishmael is pushed away. He's always going back to the Be'er L'chai Ro'i. He's going back to that place. According to that Medrash, he even brings Hagar back. He doesn't see her as a threat in that way, even though he suffered after his mother died. He didn't say, oh my God, you know, this woman is going to take my mother's place. He wasn't threatened in that way. And we know that he sought out Yishmael. He wanted to have a relationship with Yishmael. When Avram dies, they bury him together. And hopefully what we'll just see next week is that there are many, many more examples of this. Just to touch on one now, and then we'll conclude, and then we'll come back to the plot that Yitzchak hatches next week. At the very end of the parasha, after Yaakov is awarded the bracha, this is what Simon was referring to. Okay, so after Yaakov is awarded the brother, is awarded the bracha, and sent away. So the Torah should end, if you take a look at source 9, this is Pasuk Zayin, Vayishma Yaakov el aviv el imo vayilach padena aram, end scene. Over. Done. Yaakov gets the bracha. He's out. We're all ready for Parshat Vayetze. Vayetze Yaakov mi Be'er Sheva Vayelech Harana. Tell me the story of Lavan, of Rachel and Leah. I'm all ready. But wait. There is an extra two psukim holding up everybody from getting home, you know, at some kind of a reasonable hour. What are these extra two psukim? Vayar Esav Kirot Beno Kanan Beinei Yitzchak Aviv. What do you mean? Yaakov has already gotten the bracha. It's all over. Esav is rejected. Great. Who cares? And yet Yitzchak is still bothered. He wants Esav to marry the right kind of girl, to have a spiritual life. And Esav sees that his father is still bothered. If Yitzchak didn't care anymore, it would be apathy. Right? So Yitzchak keeps on coming back to this point. This is what we saw in Source 7. Where Yitzchak and Rivka are bothered by these wives, so Yitzchak is still bothered by it. If he had rejected Esav, you don't care. He's the child that you gave up on. But for Yitzchak, there is no child that you give up on. Every child is still a child, and Esav still has potential, and he wants Esav to fulfill his potential. So what does Esav do?
I thought that pasuk is only because Yitzchak had just told Yaakov, don't get girls from Canaan.
No, but that's so it's bad for Yaakov, because Yaakov is the selected
so
one. But who cares about
Esav?
So who cares? Yeah, but I think that, you know, it would have been clear to Esav that, you know what, I'm rejected. It doesn't matter. This is their hopes for Yaakov, because Yaakov's the chosen one, so I can do whatever I want. But that's not the case. There is no such thing as a rejected child for Yitzchak. So this just all ties it together. This is the last pasuk we can do. We have to clear out the room. So what does Esav do? Right? Because he knows that his father, it's not okay with his father, either for Yaakov or for him. What does Esav do? Vayelech Esav el Yishmael. Uncle Yishmael. How does he know where Yishmael is? Yishmael is the rejected one. No. Yitzchak never, he always made sure his children had a relationship with Yishmael. He marries Yishmael's daughter. He knows where Yishmael is. He knows where to find Uncle Yishmael. The families have a relationship with each other. He knows, yes, my dad was really upset about the first wives, but he'll be happy that I marry Yishmael's daughter. Right? How does this solve the problem if Yishmael is a bad guy? But no, he knows where to find Yishmael. He knows that his dad likes Yishmael. They're brothers. They get along. They have a relationship. So he goes and he marries Yishmael's daughter.
Wouldn't it have been better if he went to Rivka's house?
It could have been, but that's sort of... You know, but this is a good idea, right? Because he knows, but it's also, there's a certain poetry here, right? Esav and Yishmael are, quote-unquote, the two rejected ones. But they're not really. Yitzchak never allowed Yishmael to be rejected, to be cut off from his family. Remember, they bury their father together. He goes to Be'er L'chai Ro'i. He brings Hagar back. He has this relationship with Yishmael. And Esav, when he realizes, my father hasn't given up on me. My father still cares about who I marry. And not just Yaakov, he says, you know who I'm going to? I'm going to Yishmael, because Yishmael is the symbol of the not quite rejected brother, of the brother who still matters in the end. And there's a certain poetry there about Esav and Yishmael, and about how Yitzchak never wanted to have to choose between his children, that's what we'll come back to next week, is the plot. Again, the major points we saw today, Yitzchak is misunderstood as a character. His greatness is in his strong silence, his ability to express himself with God, his ability to express himself in private with his wife in the Ohel. What makes Yitzchak so unique is that he refuses to choose between his children. He doesn't want his brother Yishmael to be rejected. Esav, he also has hopes for Esav. That's why he cares when Esav doesn't marry the right girls, and he wants to see Esav marry. Even after Yaakov gets the bracha, Esav still has potential. And that's why Esav ultimately goes to Yishmael. He knows where to find Uncle Yishmael. He knows that his father will be happier about that. He knows that just as Yishmael was not rejected, neither is Esav. Okay, so we'll wrap it up here. The Women's Talmud has, and we'll pick it up next week.
What about...